Hello and welcome to the Grove Church Podcast. I'm Charlie Lofton, the lead pastor there, and we are so glad that you're joining us. Whether you are a member and you're just catching up on a sermon that you missed, or you're someone who's brand new, we are really glad that you are joining us. And if you are new in some way, and I know that a lot of people will do that, will listen to sermons first before they visit, I want you to know that we would love to meet you at any point. You can join us live in our services on Sunday 9 and 10:30 or our streaming service at 10:30. Either way, we would love to be able to get to know you. And regardless of why you are here listening to this sermon today, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, good morning. Hey, if you are new, I am Charlie, the lead pastor here at The Grove, and really glad that all of you are choosing to worship with us today. And we were gone last week. My wife and I, we were on our 30th anniversary trip. Our 30th anniversary is coming up here in June. Thank you. It's coming up in June. Went ahead and went on this trip. We were in London for a few days and then in Scotland for a couple of days. It was a great trip. We had a great time. And I feel like I need to apologize for having been gone last week. Not because you guys can't handle a Sunday without us. You guys did great. Mark did a great job kicking off this service. But it was just the transition that happened with the Razorback basketball program. If you guys don't know, if you're new, I'm a huge fan, have been since I was like 6 or 7 years old. And I woke up, and what happened? We're about 6 hours ahead. And so I woke up Monday morning from something that had happened here Sunday night. And I look at my phone, and there were over 60 texts that I had gotten. I looked at Heidi, and I was like, something happened. Some haven't, right? And people, I'll tell you, people I have not heard from in months, some in years, are just begging. Like, yeah, give me your hot take. What do you think's going on here? What do you think? Because, again, I have to make sure everybody's on the same page here. We hired a new coach, and this coach came from Kentucky, which is one of the top basketball programs in the nation and has been our biggest rival in the SEC on our conference for the whole time we've been there. And it is just, it's crazy because this guy has been a villain forever. He's just a villain, right? And people will say to me, he's like, well, you think about this because I know you hate him, which is strong, maybe. And then they send screenshots of texts that I've sent to them in the past. And you're like, well, okay, sure. But the reality of it is, I mean, it's amazing. It's incredible hire. I got hot takes for days, but we're on a time crunch here. I don't hate him. I don't know him, right? Hate is the kind of thing that you say, like, again, like when you're watching a villain, you have a show that you watch, a movie that you watch, and there's a character or whatever, and you hate them. That's what it is. It's like a show, and this guy was the villain, and suddenly he's not the villain, he's the good guy, right? It just kind of happens. It's like professional wrestling, which is the best analogy I can come up with, you know? Just one day he's the villain, and next, boom, next, no, he's my guy, and I love him forever, right? He's go coach, right? But we use this word hate, and you're going to be really impressed here how we just kind of whoop, right? We're just going to whoop right into the sermon here. We use this word hate. We use it a lot. We use it way more than we should, and not just for a villain in a movie or a show that is important to us. Again, it translates into sports, which is, okay, it's not that big a deal. But then we translate it into other areas of our life. We translate it into politics, right? I ask you a question. I ask you rhetorically. I'm not interested at all in anybody answering this question out loud. Do you hate the current president? Do you hate the person that was president before? Do you hate them? Hate them, right? Have we gone from they're just a villain, a caricature? Like, no, legitimately, I hate them. Because we live in a world now where it just seems like hate is what we do. If we disagree with someone, if they come from a different worldview than us, if they're on the other team, again, not talking about sports, right? I must hate them. And I think there's a part of me that like that just feels like this is like a unique, I have felt in the past, this is some sort of unique 21st century American phenomenon. But as Solomon, kind of one of the kings of Israel, he wrote in the book of Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament, there's nothing new under the sun. It's been a long time since something just out of the blue new. I mean, just things just kind of cycle around. And this book that we're going to be looking at today in 1 John, Mark did a great job last week kicking this series off for us. I mean, he's having to talk to them about this very idea. He's having to talk to them about how hate does not play a role, and it cannot play a role in the Christian life. We cannot hate each other. And so it is not a unique phenomenon to 21st century America. Apparently, we have been, the Christian leaders have been trying to root this out from the very beginning. And I think this is an incredible passage. As John is kind of addressing, I can only imagine what he feels. First century, the church is brand new, and he's having to address this with them. And we're going to see a lot of what he has to say. A lot of it's quoting Jesus from the Gospel of John, the gospel that he wrote, to really just kind of help us have the kind of perspective that we need to have and how important it is to God, to us, and to the world, the way that we relate to each other. So I mean, 1 John chapter 2, starting in verse 3. We know that we have come to know him if we keep his commands. Whoever says, I know him, but does not do what he commands is a liar, and the truth is not in that person. But if anyone obeys his word, love for God is truly made complete in them. This is how we know we are in him. Whoever claims to live in him must live as Jesus did. Dear friends, I'm not writing you a new command, but an old one, which you have had since the beginning. This old command is the message you have heard, yet I'm writing you a new command. Its truth is seen in him and in you, because the darkness is passing and the true light is already shining. Anyone who claims to be in the light but hates a brother or sister is still in the darkness. Anyone who loves their brother and sister lives in the light, and there's nothing in them to make them stumble. But anyone who hates a brother or sister is in the darkness and walks around in the darkness. They do not know where they are going because the darkness has blinded them. So this is an incredibly powerful passage. There's incredible things here, and it really kind of breaks down it kind of into two very significant things where he kind of introduces this whole idea with what I would call a very critical, important theological concept, and then transitions from that into kind of this practical thing about the way that we need to love each other. And I got to be careful here because I could talk about either of these two things forever, but I want to fully cover all of these ideas. But I want to start with where he starts with this theological point, because the older that I get, the longer I am here, the longer I have been a pastor, the longer I have been someone who is walking with God, the more and more I become convinced that this theological principle that John brings up here in the first few verses is perhaps the most important practical theological idea that Christians need to be wrestling with. And I believe that our ability to understand what he is saying here and to live it out in our hearts and our lives, I'm coming to believe is one of the key indicators of whether or not someone can have a long-term, healthy relationship with God. So I want to go back to it here, verse 3, and just kind of look at this again, starting in verse 3. We know that we have come to know him if we keep his commands. Whoever says, I know him, but does not do what he commands is a liar, and the truth is not in that person. But if anyone obeys his word, love for God is truly made complete in them. This is how we know we are in him. Whoever claims to live in him must live as Jesus did. So the thing that I believe that John is trying to get across from us, and I'm just going to say it as simply as we can, is that our love for God is demonstrated by obedience. Now, it doesn't sound particularly controversial when you just kind of say it out loud. How do you know if you love God? Well, you love God by obeying God. Like, that's a very simple thing to say. It doesn't seem particularly controversial. He's the God of the universe, and if God makes a command, then you're supposed to do the command. And if you love God, you're going to follow his commands. That sounds very simple when you say it out loud, and yet, putting our mind around exactly what John is saying there and also what he is not saying, I believe, again, is going to make the long-term difference in your life of whether or not you as a follower of Jesus Christ are able to, for the long term, maintain and develop and grow in a healthy relationship with God. Because I believe this idea, simple as it may be, love for God is demonstrated by obedience. I think people get this wrong a couple of different ways. Because what you might hear me be saying is, if you want God to love you, you have to obey him. That is not what he is saying. The love of God is given to you freely. The love of God that is demonstrated by Jesus Christ is given to you freely. It is a free gift that God has given you. His love is unconditional. You do not have to do anything to earn it. You don't have to do anything to earn it. You don't have to do anything to keep it. It is something that is given to you as a gift. It is free. But that leads people then, well, if it's free then the commands are optional, right? Right? I mean, so it's optional. You can do whatever you want. And we hear commands and we think advice. And we have a group of people that can tend to happen to where they just kind of slowly start to drift with this idea of like, I'm so focused on this idea that God's love is free. That means I don't have to do anything. And so I can just choose to live however I want. And people make that decision. And I think we can imagine, we don't have to work too hard to think of how that is going to go wrong. I mean, it is most of the problems that we have in our life are a result of us choosing to do whatever we want. Our instincts are not great. We are our own worst enemy. And when we live a life thinking that we can do whatever we want, we stray far and far away from the light that God has for us. And people who get so caught up in this idea that it just, their life just slowly falls away. And we do not, and when people do not recognize, no. God loves you. He loves you unconditionally. And you have to obey. Because when I'm not, again, what he's saying here, I'm not saying that God's love is determined by your obedience. Your love for God is determined by your obedience. You demonstrate your love for God by obedience, not his love for you, your love for him. But again, I can say that, and some of you are going to go the other direction. And you're going to start to worry. It's like, well, I don't obey, so maybe I don't love God. And you're going to start to feel like I'm never going to be good enough. And obedience towards God is not about you being good enough. You do not have to be good enough. This is not about you meeting some standard that you're never going to meet, because that is something that you will chase for your whole life if that's what you're trying to do. I've got to be obedient enough to be good enough to be acceptable to God, to be acceptable to other people, to be acceptable to myself. And eventually the pressure and the burden of that destroys people and they walk away from God. So people walk away from God because they think they can just do whatever they want and their life just crumbles. Or they're so overwhelmed by the burden of having to be good enough that they can't handle it and they walk away. And I'm not talking about splitting the difference between these two ideas. I'm talking about a third point on a triangle. It's not about being good enough. It's not about being what I can do what I want. But my response to the love of God that is given to me freely is to be obedient to him. And when I do that, I live the life that God has called me to. I live in the light that God has for me. And I can experience capital L life with God to the fullest. And so I would encourage each and every one of us to spend some time thinking about that today, spending some time thinking about over these next few weeks, and spend some time for that, thinking about that for the rest of your life. Am I falling into one of these really unhealthy ditches where I look at God's commands as optional? I do what I want. Do I feel this overwhelming burden to be good enough that I can never meet? Or am I living a life of response to the love of God by obeying and doing what he's called me to do? If we can figure out what that means, again, I am becoming more and more convinced that a long-term healthy relationship with God is found when we can put that together. So he goes from this idea about connecting our love for God to obedience into what is really what the number two most important commands. Again, he's referencing back to Jesus all the time here. When Jesus is asked what the greatest command in all of Scripture is, he first says, love God with everything that you are, which is kind of where he starts here. And we love God by doing what he says. And the next thing that he says is that we need to love God, love people, love our neighbor as ourselves. And so he starts in verse 7, and he says this, which is kind of confusing, but I just kind of want to clear it up. He says, I'm not writing you a new command, but an old one, which you've had since the beginning. This old command is the message you have heard, yet I am writing you a new command. Its truth is seen in him and in you. So this command, he's talking about that we need to love each other. And when Jesus, he's ultimately going to be quoting Jesus here from in John chapters 14 and 15, where basically he says, hey, listen, I've got this new command that I want to give you. You need to love each other, and the world is going to know that you're my disciple by the way you love each other. People aren't going to know that you're a follower of God by some amount of piety or religiousness or following certain rituals. This new idea I want to put into your head is that devotion to God will be observed and understood by the way that you love each other. And so John's saying here, this is an old command for you. You've had it since you first started following Jesus. But at the same time, it is that new command that he gave when he was here. It was new then, but it's old hat to you now. You need to be living a life of love for each other. And he continues on in verse 9 and says this, anyone who claims to be in the light but hates a brother or sister is still in the darkness. And kind of circle back to kind of where we started on this sermon, I want to say this again, that hate for one another, hating one another, it's incompatible. It's incompatible with light. The light that Jesus has given, the light that he wants us to walk in, hatred for other people, it's incompatible. Those two things, they just do not go together. They cannot go together. We need to rid ourselves of this idea of hate. Like I mentioned, we were in London and Scotland for a week. We got back really late Thursday night, early Friday morning. And it was really cool. Cooler walking around. For me, the big thing that I wanted to accomplish while we were there, to me, it was a Harry Potter and Braveheart tour. I wanted to see all the things that where Harry Potter was made and all these things. And I wanted to learn and experience all these different places and things that I saw in the movie Braveheart. It was a lot of fun. Heidi is a big, huge history buff, and so we did a lot of that too. And ultimately, I found so much of that incredibly fascinating. Like, you're sitting on this castle in Edinburgh, and they're telling you about it, and they're like, yeah, and so the earliest parts of this castle were built by William the Conqueror. And I don't know if you know who William the Conqueror was, but this is one of the random facts that's just in my head. Like, I remember that date when this guy took over what we would now call the United Kingdom. That was in 1066. So you're talking like, wait, this first was started to be built and 1,000 years ago? It's just wild. Like, well, you know, we don't have much of that left. Really, the oldest building we have is just from the 1300s. Oh, yeah, okay, well, it's just 700 years old. But that's just this one building. The rest of it's from the 1500s. And I'm like, what are we even talking? Like, it's just crazy to walk in these kinds of places. And you eventually get there for a week, right? And you see this really cool building. You walk up there, oh, what this is? Like, it was built in 1820, and you're like, lame. But you go to all these places, and all these different places, you would hear the history of it, and, you know, it starts to tie in all these different places to a lot of very significant events. And for the longest period of time, a lot of the conflicts that are going on here are, they're tribal, right? The Scots versus the Irish versus, you know, the Saxons and all these different things, they're all kind of fighting each other. And there comes this point where kind of the tribes get aligned in the 17th century, where really it becomes less tribal and ultimately it becomes religious. A lot of Protestant versus Catholic, a lot of the wars and things that continue to happen, even after the tribes began to be more and more united, the wars continued and they moved from tribal really to religious. And the more I began to process it, and I mean, as I was getting ready to think about thinking about this message at the same time, just how burdensome that is to just think about time periods where Christians would look at other Christians and say, the world would be better if you were dead, and I would rather die in a war than live in a world where you are here. And just the amount of violence that has been, again, not between Christians and other religions, which I don't approve of that either, but Christians and other Christians fighting each other. We disagree so severely, I wish you were dead. You fast forward a few hundred years, and maybe we have finally moved past Christians killing each other. But we still live in a world where it is very normal and very natural to hate someone because they see some issue within Christianity differently, because they have a different theological viewpoint, or they are living out their theology in a way that you don't approve of. And so now I must hate them. And this passage and these ideas used to get preached a lot when I was growing up, the church I grew up in, and small town, Southern Arkansas. And it seemed like we would always come around like right after a business meeting. And when we had these business meetings, they were some of the most contentious things in the world. And we would fight and we would argue and they would accuse each other of all these things. And me as a 12-year-old sitting in the back, like, what is even happening here? And he would talk about this. We need to learn to love each other and be respectful of each other. And what he was talking about is just the people in the room. Can you love the people that you're currently sitting in the room with? And that was really difficult for us. Much less the church seven blocks away within the same denomination, but they're first and we're second, or we're second and they're west side, and we really don't like them. And don't even get me started on those churches that baptize babies. We don't even want to think about them. But like, we're struggling to just love the people, to not hate the people in the room, because they think we should be doing the budget differently. Much less other churches that are just like us. Much less churches that are different than us. It just seems natural that if you disagree with me, if you have a different perspective, I have to hate. And we have allowed this cultural idea, I think, of just this worldly idea of disagreement and different perspectives must lead to animosity rather than just conversations and unity amongst diversity. We just can't seem to do it. But John makes it very clear, and again, he's quoting Jesus from the Gospel of John. Hate just doesn't work. This is just not who we can be. If we want to be people who are walking in God's light and we respond to God, we show our love for God by obedience, and if we're going to do that, hate can't be a part of it. But what God is calling us to is significantly deeper than not hating. Let's go back. Verse 10. Anyone who loves their brother and sister lives in the light, and there is nothing in them to make them stumble. But anyone who hates a brother or sister is in the darkness and walks around in darkness. It is not just simply that we need to avoid hate. But what God has called us to is this: let's love each other, and let's love each other well. Let's love each other well. It would be a huge deal if the world at large could get past hate, especially if Christians could. Because when the world looks at us, and Jesus said this, here's how the world is going to know that you are one of my followers. They're going to know by the way you love each other. And when people are making assessments about whether or not we're true followers of Jesus, about whether or not we love each other, it is deeper than what happens in any particular one room. It is the way that Christians love and talk about each other all around the world. People outside of this church, outside of the church, don't view one room different than another room. They're wondering why those rooms don't like each other. But we are going to move past that, and we are going to move to be people who love each other well. And the thing that I want us to do, I want it to start right here in this room. Because here's the thing that I do believe. I've been a part of the Grove for almost 14 years. And I believe that you guys and we as a church, we have done a great job of really putting aside the hate and the animosity that can often come from churches that are rivals to each other, churches that see things differently. And I think that we've done a great job with that. I think we've done a really good job here too of being a place where you can sit and worship and love someone sitting next to you that votes differently than you, that thinks about the world differently than you do, that we have done a good job of being countercultural with this idea of hate and animosity and rivalry amongst Christians. Christians looking at other Christians as if they are the movie villain. I think that we have done a good job of that. But what I believe, and this God has been putting this on my heart for the last few weeks, what I believe that God is calling us to get us from where we are to where we need to be, is we need to be actively, purposefully loving each other well. I hate to keep going back to this. Part of me just wants it to not be true, to just move on and keep coming back to it. But I do believe that it is true. It is without a doubt the first statement that I'm going to say is true. That March of 2020, the introduction of COVID into our society, it changed our world significantly. And especially what changed the world is the way that we responded to that with quarantining and isolating and all of those things, and the way that we responded to the response. All of these things, I believe, have radically changed our world. And I think what happened was, one of the most significant things that happened was, when you start talking all the time about isolation, social distancing, quarantining, it starts to become a lot more natural for there to be barriers between you and someone else. And there is such a heightened fear in the world, and there is such a heightened animosity in the world, that I believe then what happens is you start to kind of move into, and I think we all did this, into a very survival mindset. I've got to make sure that I can get what's mine. I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to get what's mine. I'm afraid that I'm going to miss out, or someone is going to take something from me. And we start to live our lives in such a way where I've got to get. And I think we've gotten stuck there. I think we've gotten stuck in a survival mode. And we've lost a sense of the depth and the power and the importance of community and connection with each other. And I believe what God is calling us to do is to wake us up from a slumber. I think we fell asleep, and I think we're having a hard time waking up. And God is calling us to view our lives and this time and our connection to each other very differently than what we have been. It is a very normal and natural thing to come to a church and want to connect with God, to want to hear from God's word and to learn something. But a very critical, absolute, essential part of what we do here is the way that we love and connect with one another. That is why we're doing it here, and why we stopped, let's just not come here anymore, and let's just all watch it on video together. Shout out to everybody who still, for whatever reason, for one reason or another, is watching us on video. No disrespect, but there's a reason why we do it together. There's a reason why it's important for us to be together. We need each other. And I know, I only know a few stories, But I know enough stories of people here in this room that life is coming at a lot of us really, really hard right now. And there are a lot of people here suffering with some significant loss and anxiety and fear and brokenness. And we need each other. And this needs to be a place where when you walk in, you can just feel the love for each other. That a new person walks in, even if they're thinking, man, I need a minute before I want to jump in, they can't help but be attracted by the connection and the love that we have for each other and the desire that we have to not just simply put you belong on the outside of the building, but for it to feel like we belong with each other here inside the building. It's not just simply you are more than welcome to be here, but we want to connect with you. And so I come here on a Sunday not simply to learn, not simply to connect with God, but in addition to all of that, to look for the incredible opportunities that will be available every week to connect with somebody who needs just a little bit of love, a little bit of encouragement. Because Jesus made it very, very clear, this is what is going to be the primary draw, the primary attractor. We spend a lot of time prepping messages. We spend a lot of time rehearsing worship. Those are the main functions of what happens here. In the same way, we need to prepare ourselves for our time with each other, for the opportunity that we have to love well, to connect well, to find the people who are hurting and broken. Because as I'm sitting here saying this, hey, I know that there are a lot of you experiencing loss and hurt and brokenness. You think I'm talking to you, and I may not even know your story. I just know a few. I just know that there is a huge need in this room that we all have for connection with one another. And we want to be known inside and outside of this room as a group and a body of people who love each other well. That we are not going to respond to the commands of God by just saying, I can do whatever I want. But we are not burdened by all of these rules that tell us we can never be good enough. We live lives of grateful, loving response and demonstrate our love for God by our obedience. And we see that first and primarily in the way that we love each other well. Now, we're about to worship, and I just encourage you to respond. I mean, I would just encourage you to sit, and I encourage you to worship. I encourage you to go back there to the back. We have a response area. If you are in need of some encouragement, there are people back there that would love to pray with you and connect with you. There's places where you can pray for the people that God has put in your life. There's a place to take communion. There's lots of different ways to respond. But I believe right now that God is putting it on each and every one of our hearts, both specific people and specific things that we can do to love well. Let me pray. God, I thank you that you brought everybody here today. God, you've given us this time that our hearts can be drawn to you through worship, that we can hear from your word and we can learn. But God, I pray that we would not leave here without taking a step to just love well, to ask someone how they're doing and to desire a real answer. And God, if we are the one who is broken, God, that we would go and we would talk to somebody, that we would not continue to live in isolation. That God, whether or not we feel like we need something or we have something to give, God, that we would take the initiative to connect. And that God, that you would grow us into a place that loves well and loves deeply. that we would not be burdened by rules. And that we would not walk outside the light just doing what we want. But God, that we would live a life of love and response to you. And that we would be known both inside and outside of this building as a group of people who love you and each other very well. And we're so thankful for your Son who makes this possible. And it's in his name we pray. Amen.
Thanks again for joining us on our sermon podcast. And you can learn more about us at thegrovechurch.org. And if you go to thegrovechurch.org/connect, there's a form you could fill out. Just let us know that you've been listening. And if you want to dig deeper on some of these topics that we cover in our sermon podcast or just in other issues of dealing with culture or theology, those kinds of things, you can check out our Cultivate podcast, which is on the same feed, however you found this particular podcast. So again, this is Charlie, the lead pastor at The Grove, and thank you so much for joining us.